Welcome to another broadcast of Celebrating Truth with Dr. E. Fay Williams, Esquire, on the Artist First Radio Network. Dr. Williams currently serves as National Chair of the National Congress of Black Women and President of Natural Health Options. All past shows can be downloaded free on demand. Visit the archives for Dr. Williams and Celebrating Truth at artistfirst.com. And now, here's your host, Dr. Williams.
Thank you so much, Tony. Good evening and welcome to Celebrating Truth, brought to you by the National Congress of Black Women. I'm Fay Williams, National Chair of the National Congress of Black Women and your host for Celebrating Truth. Sounds like President Obama has good reason to be singing Let's Stay Together after a pretty good progress report on jobs last week. We're really excited about that, so much so that I decided to sing that same line he sang a week ago at a Delta Sigma Theta conference for which I was speaking yesterday, and I received a pretty good response, too. But I know the audience would have preferred to hear him, you know, maybe next time. But our first guest today is our own executive producer, Ms. Clem Clark, and she will tell you all about communicating with us in the National Congress of Black Women via Twitter and Facebook and all those other social media things that I haven't really figured out how to use yet. But I know Clem will tell you what they are before we leave. We'll also talk a little bit about Black history since this is Black History Month. She's from Yazoo City, Mississippi, and knows the two young women who will be on as our guests today. They, too, have a connection to Yazoo City, and we'll find out what it means to have so many talented community service-oriented women from the same area. Welcome to Celebrating Truth again, Clem. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, Dr. Williams. If you had asked me this 24, 48 hours ago, it probably would have been a different story. I had strep throat and the stomach flu.
Oh, my. Well, I'm so sorry. Well, you know, Celebrating Truth is going to heal all of that, so just get ready for it then.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
You know, before I met you, Clem, the only person I knew from Yazoo City was Governor Haley Barbour, and I'm not bragging about that, but let's talk a little bit about Yazoo City since our guests are from there today, and, of course, you've introduced me to a lot of wonderful people from Yazoo City, so we're going to find out what's going on down there.
I would be happy to do that, Dr. Williams. I will tell you that regardless of where I've gone or traveled or lived in the United States or traveled abroad, there is no place like home. I love my home of Yazoo City, Mississippi, and every chance I get, Dr. Williams, to go home, I try to do so. My mother still resides in Yazoo City, as well as my sisters, family, friends. I still consider that to be home. Now, before we go into talking about Yazoo City and your two guests on today, Dr. Williams, as we celebrate Black History Month, I want to take a minute and just salute you, Dr. Williams, for your contributions to making history. You have done so much to pave the way for women like myself who are coming up behind you, and I want to thank you. And then more importantly, for your role in owning the exclusive rights, manufacturing rights, to the natural products that was founded by Dr. George Washington Carver, the scientific genius. So I want to thank you, you know, for the contributions that you've made, not only to women rights, civil rights, Black history, but you and yourself are leaving a legacy. And I want to personally thank you while you're still alive.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that. I didn't know that I was going to be the subject of the Black History this month.
Yeah, well, you and my eyes and in my opinion and in my heart, you truly are.
Well, thank you so much for that. And, you know, I guess we have to learn how to take compliments as well as we give those compliments out. But I appreciate your thinking of some of the things that I try to do. And now let's see if we can...
Talk about Yazoo City? Absolutely.
Yeah.
As we lead into talking about Yazoo City, it's a small town. It's the gateway to the Mississippi Delta. And you mentioned the former Governor Haley Barbour, but there are a lot of other extraordinary people who are from the Mississippi Delta, especially from Yazoo City. And I want to salute one of those people, and that's Mrs. Leola Dillard. She's celebrating her 100th birthday today, Dr. Williams. And you're talking about a great African-American woman. This woman has truly made a difference in so many lives in Yazoo City, Mississippi. She's a retired teacher. She's a champion of the Lifesavers program. She's been a national finalist for the USA Today's Weekend Make a Difference program. She's just an extraordinary unsung hero like Gloria Elaine Owens in Yazoo City. And programs like Lifesavers, the youth program, they don't get the recognition they deserve. But if it wasn't for programs like Lifesavers, people like my Lifesavers as well as Head Start, people like myself and your two guests that's coming up after me, Dr. Pamela Bracey and Dr. Charlotte Baker, we wouldn't be the women that we are today if it wasn't for the Mrs. Leola Dillards and the Gloria Elaine Owens and yourself and some of the other folks who come out of Yazoo City, Mississippi. So I want to thank all of those women. You know, I just want to give praise and thanks to all those women.
Well, that's wonderful of you to remember because everybody does not remember. And, you know, it's really important. We've had some people who've given their blood, their sweat, and their tears for us. So there is no reason for us to act like we made it on our own brain or our own brawn, you know. There was always somebody out there who gave something so that we could be what we are today. And even though I'd like to have a longer month, my friend Dick Gregory says, you know, even celebrating Black History, we were given the shortest month in the year. But that just means that we need to celebrate our history every day. And while we emphasize it in February, we need to, you know, remember to celebrate all of the people who came before us to make the world what it is today, because we're seeing so much hate, so much mean-spiritedness on the part of so many people. And all you have to do is look at the presidential race right now on the R side, as I call them, and just see how hateful they are to one another. And then you can see easily why some people in our society are also expressing that same meanness toward others who've done absolutely nothing to them.
Well, you know, Dr. Williams, I'm so glad that you mentioned that, but I need to step back for a moment because, you know, I recognize yourself and Mrs. Leola Dillard and some of the other great women in my hometown, but I need to check myself and give praises and honor to God and to my mother, Miss Mary Howard, because, again, you know, charity starts at home and move abroad. And it was my mother and father. They had very limited formal education, but they instilled in their children a sense of confidence and appreciation and value for who you are and whose you are. And Dr. William, I don't care where I live. I may live in San Francisco, California right now, but I always tell people, regardless of where I'm speaking or where I'm traveling, I tell people I bring you greetings from San Francisco, California, by way of Yazoo City. And the reason why I say that, because I give homage and I give respect to my mother and to the people whose shoulders that I stand on and for the people who helped me to get to San Francisco, California. So I needed to step back and just kind of check myself because, again, I wouldn't be the woman that I am today if it wasn't for my mother. If it wasn't for my oldest sister and sisters who have been here with me and for me, loved me unconditionally, and they put me in check when I step out of line, Dr. Williams.
I can imagine. I have an older sister who works with me, so you know what it's like for me every day. But she fusses with me all the time, but I appreciate her because, you know, she left her job. She retired years ago, maybe 15 years or so ago. And we had a retirement party on Sunday, and she came to work for me on Monday, and she's been here ever since. And you would think she owns this office because she has total control over it.
Well, that is so funny because we could have a whole conversation on sisterhood and sisters mm-hmm. because I tell you, Dr. Williams, I just thank God every day for my family and for my friends, especially my sisters and brothers, my mother, because like you said, my sister, my baby sister called me this weekend, and I hadn't talked to her in a couple of days or a couple of weeks, and she started fussing, and then my oldest sister, they love you unconditionally.
Yes.
And they will tell you, Dr. Williams, when your stuff ain't quite right. You know, they love you unconditionally, but they're not going to hold any punches. They're going to tell me, Clem, you're jacked up right now, or you're whacked, or you're off point, or you ain't doing right. And so
yeah.
I just absolutely love that. And when you talk about Yazoo City, Mississippi, it's the same way from my family to the friends to my teachers. Again, Dr. Williams, when I go home, I love going to Yazoo City because life is so simple for me there. You know, everywhere I go, people want to feed you. It's a great, I encourage all of your listening audience, if you've never been to the Mississippi Delta, start with Yazoo City because it is the gateway to the Mississippi Delta, and the rich history that goes all up to that delta is extraordinary.
Well, you know, I want to thank you for reminding me that I need to thank my mother and thank God, because my mother has been wonderful to us, too. I've been blessed. There's seven of us, girls and two boys, so I have sisters wherever I go. I have sisters in my sorority. I have sisters like you. I have sisters even, you know, who are AKAs. They're Zetas. They're members of Sigma Gamma Rho. I have sisters who are not even in sororities. I'm just blessed because I have so many blood sisters and then, you know, other sisters in God, and I appreciate that. You've introduced me to so many wonderful people, but so that we have an opportunity to get to know the other two young women from Yazoo City, Mississippi, we're going to say goodbye to you. And I hope you didn't miss the fact that you got a promotion. You're now executive producer.
Oh, I heard the promotion. and by the way, Dr. Williams, I want you to know that as of, I think it's today, that it's our one-year anniversary of working together. So
oh,
I want
wow.
to thank you for your mentorship, and thank you for the promotion. I'll
All
take
right.
it.
Okay, then we're going to go to break, but before we do, last week we had Miss Lavonia Perriman on, and she asked us to write letters to our First Lady, Michelle Obama, to let her know how much we appreciate her. Lavonia is collecting thousands of letters of adoration to our First Lady, Michelle Obama, and they will all be compiled to present to her. All of the things that you have to do are very, very simple. Just write a letter to the First Lady, just as if you're standing there before her, tell her what you think about her and that you've got her back, and then email that letter to us at drefayewilliams, that's drefayewilliams at gmail.com, and we'll be sure to get those letters to Lavonia for you. We'll be right back with Dr. Pamela Bracey, and thank you so much, Clem.
Thank you, Dr. William. God bless.
God bless.
Do you see that doggy in the shelter?
Hi, I'm Buddy, the adorable puppy you adopted from the Humane Society.
Meow. I'm Whiskers.
You ready for Dr. Bracey?
Just waiting for someone
right,
to love me.
When you adopt a pet, we hope your new furry friend will become a cherished member of your family. And as Buddy and Whiskers will tell you, the key to success is following the rules to love by.
Woof, that's right. Please give me food, water, and exercise every day. To stay healthy, I need the same kind of things you need.
Talk to me. I like hearing your voice.
You're my best friend. Please don't stay mad at me or lock me up as punishment. Remember, I'm probably going to live 10 to 15 years, so take care of me when I get old.
One day you'll need someone to take care of you, too.
A message from the Montgomery County Humane Society. Visit www.mchumane.org for the complete rules to love by.
You'll be your best friend for life.
If you're an African American man, you need to know about oral cancer. Oral cancer is more common in African American men than in any other group in the U.S. If you have a sore or lump in your mouth that doesn't go away after 2 weeks, see a doctor or a dentist. Most often, these symptoms don't mean cancer, but it's important to get them checked. If you do have oral cancer, it can be treated more successfully if it's caught early. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, National Institutes of Health.
You're listening to Celebrating Truth on the Artist First Radio Network. And now, here's your host, Dr. E. Faye Williams, Esquire.
An honor.
Welcome back to Celebrating Truth. I'm Faye Williams, your host, and we've got another wonderful guest on from Yazoo City, Mississippi. She doesn't live there now, but Clem has told us how wonderful that city is. Dr. Bracey is a native of Mississippi, and she's currently a curriculum specialist and project coordinator for an educational excellence grant, which is funded by Texas Education Agency to develop professional development materials for careers and technical education teachers of the information technology cluster. She is also an adjunct professor and research affiliate of the Center for Knowledge Solutions in the Department of Learning Technologies at the University of Texas. Well, welcome, my sister, and I'm just so eager to hear you tell us about Yazoo City and your connection with that city.
Hello, Dr. Williams. It is indeed an honor and privilege to be here with you today.
Yes, well, it's an honor to have you on. Anytime Clem refers someone to us, we just know that that person is going to be wonderful.
Well, that is great to hear, especially to hear that you are eager to hear about my upbringing in Yazoo City, Mississippi. But I must say that there are some great people and great mentors who helped me become who I have become today. Definitely too many to name. But you won't find a more supportive place than Yazoo City, Mississippi. I will tell you that.
Wonderful. Now, you've got a lot of experience outside the city. I was telling Clem earlier, the only person I knew before I knew her and getting to know the two of you who will be on today was Governor Haley Barbour. And I said, I'm not bragging about that, but I do brag about all these wonderful young women like you that I've been meeting from Yazoo City, and the city must be very proud of Clem and you and our guest who's going to be on after you.
Thank you so much. And yes, many people do always relate us to Haley Barbour, but no, Yazoo City is much more than that.
Mm-hmm. Now, with instructional experience on both secondary and post-secondary levels, you are a devoted advocate of the inclusion of relevant career preparation in education. That's a subject we discussed at the Delta Social Action Commission on yesterday. And I know that you're interested in bridging the employability skills gap between academia and the workplace. How do you suggest we do that?
Yes, ma'am. And this is something that's extremely important and also something that is an initiative of President Obama as well. But I've been an advocate for a career in technical education for years, actually since high school. And something that I have found through research is that many people focus on the technical skills that we need for today's workforce, which are extremely important. However, most potential employees are not being hired or retained because they lack the proper soft skills. And when I say soft skills, I'm referring to social etiquette, communication, manners, people skills, or ethics. And so many companies, they're committed to providing technical skill training for their employees, but they have the belief that soft skills should already be learned prior to you reaching the workforce. However, we all know that not everyone is blessed to come from a home where soft skills are a priority. Therefore, secondary and post-secondary must begin to fill the gap. And where this begins is through collaboration. Companies and academia must begin to work together more effectively to ensure that the instruction that's going on both levels is aligned with the needs of the workforce, especially in the areas of soft skill development. Because one can have all of the talent in the world, but if he or she does not know how to properly present themselves, the talent will never get discovered. And so that's something that's really overlooked in today's society, but that's why I'm such a huge advocate. And I really believe that we really need to focus more on the soft skill development of today's youth and future employees, especially, how involved we are with social media these days.
For those of you who are just joining us, we're talking with Dr. Pamela Bracey, a current curriculum specialist and project coordinator in Texas. Now, you're in Dallas, am I correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, wonderful. Okay. I know that one of these days we're going to get a great chapter of the National Congress of Black Women down there in Dallas. So if you find someone who's interested in being in a great women's organization, almost as great as Delta Sigma Theta, I'll tell you, then I need you to refer them to me because we got Houston, but we haven't been able to get Dallas, although we do have a few members there. But help a sister out here if you find someone
ma'am.
Who's ready to lead an organization, okay?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Now, you've conducted training workshops with educators, and you've presented research to stakeholders related to career and technical education on all levels, local, state, national, and international levels. And you're also a publisher and author of several journals and articles, book chapters, and conference proceedings. Where do we find some of your writings?
Oh, yes, ma'am. Many of my publications can be found in academic journals at this point. One can be found in the Handbook of Research on Workforce Diversity and in a Global Society. Also, the Encyclopedia of E-Leadership, Counseling, and Training. I've also been published in the conference proceedings of the eLearn World Conference, the Society for Information Technology and Teacher Education International Conference, and also an article that I'm very proud of is in the International Journal of Adult Vocational Education and Technology.
Okay, and I suppose people who are familiar with those will know how to find them, but before we go, I'll ask you to give us your either email or a website or your phone number so that people who need more information on that can get it.
Definitely.
Okay, but I understand you're also a member of the American Educational Research Association and the Association of the Advancement of Computing in Education, the Academy of Human Resource Development, the Association for Career and Technical Education, the Golden Key International Honor Society, the Society for Information Technology and Teacher Education. But then you're a member of Delta Sigma Theta Incorporated, and the Delta Sigma Theta reference certainly interests me. Where were you made at Delta?
Yes, ma'am. The University of Southern Mississippi, MU New Chapter, Spring 2004.
Mm-hmm. All right, then. That sounds like you must be very, very young, because I was made a long time before you were. And, you know, yesterday I had the opportunity to see, I think it was about five of our former national presidents. That's always a thrill, you know, to see Sora Frankie Freeman was there, Sora Thelma Daly, our current Sora, Dr. Butler McIntyre. There was Dr. Louise Rice. I mean, just... It was amazing, you know. And
it was amazing.
That's what inspired me to try to sing the song that the president sang when I looked out there and saw all those beautiful sisters and all that red. It's just so wonderful having so many sisters, and I hope you're experiencing that same thing as a Delta.
Yes, ma'am.
Wonderful.
I couldn't tell you the many experiences that I've been able to be exposed to because of Delta Sigma Theta. Even when I was a little girl, I must pay homage to the sorors of Delta Sigma Theta sorority, because I looked up to these women on a local and national level.
Mm-hmm.
And they were the educators in the community. They were the community activists. And I was nurtured by these women, especially those of the Yazoo City Alumni Chapter, like one of your former guests, Elaine Owens.
Mm-hmm.
And so they would always push us to do our very best in the community and also expose us to places outside of Yazoo to help us become better women.
Wonderful. Now, Elaine Owens, that you mentioned, was one of our honorees at the National Congress of Black Women this past year when we had our event in September of 2011. It seems that we always find Deltas that we can honor. But, you know, one of the wonderful things about it is that there are other women sororities, too,
right.
And I'm sure they feel the same way, and they have the same kind of encouragement from their sorority members who were older than they are. I think in our last guest, we're going to find that she's a member of another sorority, Alpha Kappa Alpha, and I'm going to ask her basically the same kinds of questions, because some people think that sororities are just social, but that's just not true for black sororities. Yes, we do community and public service. Now, I want to ask you something. You attribute much of your success to the Gates Millennium Scholars Program and the United Negro College Fund. What role have they played in your life?
Well, I was not born with a silver spoon in my mouth. And
mm-hmm.
so I understood when I got to high school that if I didn't work hard to earn scholarship funds, the opportunity for me to go to college was pretty much non-existent. And so I did whatever I could. Any scholarship I could apply for, I did. But the largest one that I received was the Bill Gates Millennium Scholarship, and that scholarship has covered me from my bachelor's degree to my master's degree, then to my PhD.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to providing financial support, the GMS Scholarship also provided professional development. They would fly us all over the country and expose us to different conferences, and even to this day, they are still providing various kinds of support to their scholars. And so I'm just forever grateful to the Gates Millennium Scholarship Fund and United Negro College Fund, because without them, I know for a fact I would not be where I am today. And so it's just a huge blessing to have been able to serve as a scholar. And now I'm trying to give back as a Gates Millennium Scholarship mentor. And so what I'm currently doing now is mentoring the scholars behind me who are starting out as freshmen and may need some guidance along the way. So that's what I'm trying to do to give back.
And that's a good lesson for all of us who are blessed in life. We need to share those blessings with others who are coming along behind us. And I notice you've earned a PhD in Applied Technology and Performance Improvement from the University of North Texas. You have an MS in Higher Education Administration from Mississippi College and a BS in Business Technology from the University of Southern Mississippi. I think you've just kind of been all around doing the education thing, which I always encourage young people to do too, and you've done research. You've just done so many things, and I want to applaud you and compliment you on that, especially with it being Black History Month. We like to recognize what people are doing that's worth imitating, and I thank you for, you know, inspiring other young women. Now, you live in Dallas now?
Yes, ma'am. I'm in Dallas Metroplex.
And I know a secret. Your husband and you are anticipating the birth of your very first child.
Yes, ma'am. We are very excited
to
be here.
Do you plan to work up to that magic day and beyond, or are you going to just quit at that point?
Well, I don't think I have the capacity to just quit, even though that would be ideal. But I'm always doing something, whether it's volunteering somewhere or something for my church. I'm always a busy bee. Mm-hmm. However, I've been trying to take it easy. I know at least until May, I plan to continue to work. However, the summer, I do plan to take the summer off. But in August, it's full speed ahead again.
All right, then. Now, as a professional who reached many of your life goals before you were 30, how do you measure success?
Well, as we all know, success can be measured in a variety of ways depending upon the specific targeted goals. However, I always consider myself successful if I can answer the following four questions. Number one, have I done my very best? Number two, am I completely happy with the personal and professional choices that I've made? Number three, have I represented my family, hometown, and race in a positive manner? And, of course, number four is God pleased with what I have done? And so I must admit that I have been blessed beyond my wildest imagination throughout the 27, almost 28 years of my life.
Well, now, you've mentioned the help that you received from others, and you've given them, of course, rightly so, their praise. But how does it feel to have done all of that and have no student loan debt?
It's absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing, because I talked to several of my friends, and you know, I hear the things that they're having to go through with student loan debts, and I'm just forever grateful. And in addition to the Gates Scholarship, I didn't stop there. I continued to apply for several other local scholarships and state scholarships so that I could make sure that I was covered. And so it's just something that you have to do. It's not easy, and a lot of people don't want to go through that process of applying, but it's very well worth it.
Well, as a young person, what is it that motivated you throughout your academic journey? I mean, you're still so young, but you've done so much.
Well, as I said earlier, I'm extremely blessed to have been born into an extremely supportive family, rooted in a supportive community by the name of Yazoo City, Mississippi. And regardless of what I do or where I go in life, I know that I can always count on an encouraging word, a note, a phone call, or an email at the most random times when I need them most. And people just don't really understand how much that type of support impacts the life of a young person. And many people talk negatively about my generation, but that has really motivated me to want to prove them wrong.
Now, if you could give just one piece of advice to other determined students who live in rural areas like your hometown of Yazoo City, Mississippi, what would that be?
If I could give one piece of advice, I would tell the students in rural areas, regardless of what the world tries to tell you, what you are or who you are or what you will become, you know, just stay true to who you really are, because many people in rural areas are labeled at risk of failing and being nothing but a negative statistic. And I also fell into this category due to the fact that I was of a single-parent household and the child of a drug addict. But to God be the glory for allowing me to combat those types of stereotypes through hard work and perseverance. And I would also tell them that exposure to things outside of your hometown, that's very important, along with networking, but it's very important to also never forget where you come from.
All right. And since I know many of the college students you teach, you're being so young, they're probably non-traditional. Do you ever find your profession intimidating with people being older than you are and you're their teacher?
Well, the politically correct response would be no, not at all. However, realistically, I would have to say, of course, many of my students are military veterans or seasoned professionals over the age of 40 who are now, you know, needing bachelor's degrees to maintain employment. And so my students can be very demanding, and sometimes they try to challenge my knowledge base. But I absolutely love what I do, and it keeps me on my toes. And so I also love to see the look on people's faces when they come into my office and meet me face-to-face for the first time.
Yeah, well, I know how I feel when I walk in and there's a doctor who looks like he or she has just gotten out of medical school. I do ask a few questions first, like, where did you go to school? How long have you been practicing? I guess that's kind of normal.
Yeah.
Well, are there other personal or mentoring projects you're currently working on outside of the academic setting?
Well, yes, ma'am. In addition to my profession within academia, I'm currently writing my autobiography, which will entail my journey throughout the doctoral process. And so I'm also looking for researching publishing opportunities for my autobiography. I'm hoping that this book will help motivate other young Black scholars to successfully persevere all the way through the dissertation.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also the leader of the scholarship ministry at my church here in the Dallas area, Friendship Baptist Church of the Colony. And I serve as a mentor for high school students and try to help them secure scholarship funding. And in the future, I also plan to work with youth on a larger scale by founding a nonprofit organization that enhances the social and professional skills of middle and high school students.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the projects, right?
Yeah, there's so much to talk about with you. I knew we would run out of time, but so that I don't get accused of giving my Delta Sora more time than I'm going to give my AKA sister over here, we're going to sort of have to wrap it up. But one more question I want to ask, and that is, of course, for you to give numbers where or email where people can reach you who might want to know more about your work. And then finally, do you have any thoughts on the president's remarks about the need for increased career training during his most recent State of the Union address?
Yes, ma'am. Well, my website is www.pambracey.com. That's PAMBRACEY.com. And my phone number is 972-652-0002. And my email address is pam.bracey@gmail.com. And regarding President Obama's remarks during the State of the Union address, I am in full agreement with his blueprint for an economy that's built to last, and that's why I'm always an advocate for career and technical education, because I'm a product of it. When people think of CTE or vocational education, they negatively associate it with those who are not smart or who aren't college material. However, this is far from accurate.
Okay, right. Okay, and we are going to have to stop here. We'll have to have you on again. Thank you so much, Dr. Pamela Bracey, and good luck throughout your career.
Thank you so much.
We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we're going to be speaking with Dr. Charlotte Baker of Atlanta, Georgia, and as I said, a member of the other sorority, Alpha Kappa Alpha, but we're going to try to give her equal time.
Yes,
we'll be right back.
You're listening to Celebrating Truth on the Artist First Radio Network. And now, here's your host, Dr. E. Fay Williams, Esquire.
Thank you so much, Tony, and welcome back to Celebrating Truth. Sorry about that little glitch we just had in bringing up Dr. Charlotte Baker, who is now with us. And it was a little bit of a challenge for a while, but you know women are made to overcome challenges. So we want to welcome to Celebrating Truth Dr. Charlotte Baker of Atlanta, Georgia, and she is a member of Alpha Kappa Alpha. Hello, Dr. Baker. How are you?
Hello. How are you doing?
I'm blessed. You know, I was trying so hard not to give my Delta Sora more time than I gave you, and then something went wrong, so I just want you to know it was not my intention. Everybody who's listening knows that I was trying to even up the time.
It's all love.
Yes. Well, I want to thank you so much for coming on with us today, and I understand you also are from Yazoo City, Mississippi, and what is all this sudden magic about Yazoo City? What does your city mean to you?
Yazoo City was a really great place to grow up. There were a lot of really good and supportive people there, whether they were family members, teachers, coaches. I think it's always been a magical place. Other people are just realizing that, but hopefully more people will see that in the future.
Now, are you near water?
No, ma'am.
No.
So.
I mean, is Yazoo City near the water?
Yazoo City is not that far from the Mississippi River.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually, I would say, maybe about 20, 30 minutes, but it's near the Yazoo River,
mm-hmm.
which is a tributary. So more farmland than water.
Okay.
But
Well, I'm from Louisiana, and we've got mostly farmland there, so I understand that. But we're going to try to rush through some of the questions because we had a lot that we wanted to talk about. Now, I understand you're an epidemic intelligence service officer at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta, Georgia. Now, I need you to tell us what that is.
Yes, ma'am. The Epidemic Intelligence Service, or as known as EIS, is a competitive two-year postgraduate fellowship at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta that focuses on the job training in applied epidemiology. And epidemiology, if you're not familiar, is the study of disease and its determinants, or very simply put, who is sick, why are they sick, and how can we keep them from being sick again? If you think of about a medical doctor who works with one person, in epidemiology we look at hundreds or thousands of people at a time to figure out health problems.
Now, you sound like you're very, very young, and I know that you already hold a Doctor of Public Health from the University of Kentucky and a Master's of Public Health from the University of Pittsburgh with a Bachelor of Science from Appalachian State University. How did you accomplish so much, and what inspired you to do that?
First of all, my mantra has always been, don't ever let anyone tell you you can't do something. The Doctor of Public Health degree is usually a degree that's pursued by people who have been in the workforce for a while and are actually coming back to get more hands-on experience in public health. I wanted to go straight through school. I knew myself. I knew if I stop, you know, there'll be people who will support me, but I have to support myself right now to do what I want to do. And so through using family and friends, the community people that I grew up with, always talking to people who are supporting me, went through school, got my degree, now currently in the EIS fellowship. So just never stopping doing what I want to accomplish.
For those of you who are just joining us, we're talking with Dr. Charlotte Baker of Atlanta, Georgia, and she's from Yazoo City, Mississippi. She is an Epidemic Intelligence Service officer, and I think that's quite impressive. I know when I was in undergraduate school, that was like my favorite school, and I wonder, what was your favorite organization when you were in school, undergraduate school?
Oh, my gosh, there's so many, and I don't want to discount anyone.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually have continued to do quite a bit of work with Alpha Phi Omega National Service Fraternity. I'm also a member of Alpha Kappa Alpha, as you have mentioned. But Alpha Phi Omega was kind of the first thing that I got into when I got to college.
Is that a service organization?
It is. It's actually the nation's largest student service organization. We have over 300,000 members, currently have over 360 active chapters in the United States and the Philippines, and currently expanding into Australia and other countries. And so it's really given me a chance to find myself, find the types of service that I like to do, find ways to give back to the community. And I currently work with a group of students at Kentucky State University to help them realize their goal of being a chapter of Alpha Phi Omega and find their way to support their local community.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, usually Deltas and AKAs sort of tease each other about which one is the biggest and the best and has the brightest and what have you. But I'm just so proud of all of you young women, whether you belong to a sorority or not. And it seems that in recent years, unlike when I made Delta, I mean, or when my friends made AKA, they were very, very partial. But now it's kind of like we're all sisters and we form coalitions. We work together on certain projects. Do you find that to be true in your area?
I do. I find that if you are willing to collaborate with others, no matter whatever your differences, whether you're in different organizations or you have different goals, there's always something that you can help each other do. And there's always something that you can learn from other people. I have plenty of friends who are in other sororities. I have plenty of friends who aren't in any sorority. But we can always work together and find a way to support each other and to find a way to support those in our communities, no matter where that is.
Wonderful. And you were a recipient of the National Cancer Institute and American Legacy funded doctoral fellowship in tobacco-related health disparities, which we know is a big problem in our community. This was sponsored by the Tobacco Research Network on Disparities and focused on smoking cessation. And I wonder if you were successful in stopping people from smoking.
Our largest goal for that actually wasn't to stop people from smoking, but it was to find out why they wanted to stop smoking and find out why, what were their barriers? What were the problems to keep them from stopping smoking if they wanted to stop in the first place? We actually found that for a lot of them, it was just something they always did. It was just something that they always had done, or it was something that someone else in their community had done, or it was a way to relieve stress. But as they found out more information, as we were able to give them more information, or their health provider were able to give them more information, a lot of them did quit. But quitting tobacco is one of those things that it takes time. Anything health behavior takes time to change. So as public health practitioners, as the health providers, we have to just continue giving that information and letting people come to that realization. And I do say that, it's not the opinion of the CDC, who I'm currently employed by, but it's a very important thing to understand that people change as they wish to change.
I keep trying to think of any of my friends who smoke. I really don't know anyone who smokes anymore. Does that mean that fewer people are smoking, or is it just among my friends?
There has been a drop in the current trend in smoking. It's dropping enough. We're really happy that it's actually dropping with youth that are smoking. As more, as the taxes go up, as people find ways to stop smoking, as they find other things to do, I think we'll always continue to see that trend going down, and I hope it does continue to go down. But I can't say, that it's definitely done in a big enough drop that would make a large enough difference for enough people, because your smoking habits don't just affect you, they affect the people around you. And some people do stop smoking because it's affecting the people around them. Their family members have asthma, their family members, their babies, and your cigarette smoke sits on every item that's around you. So I really think that it will continue to go down, and hopefully go down among the African-American population.
I know I can walk into a room where someone smoked a week ago. I can still smell it. People always talk about my nose. I said, oh, I can smell it. And if someone smokes, they don't even have to be smoking around me. I can smell it in their clothing, in their hair. If they just walk in the room, I can smell it. And it's a very unpleasant smell. Sorry about that for those who like to smoke. But after, it's like days old, it's a very unpleasant smell to anyone who does not smoke. So I'm always urging people, if they do smoke, try not to smoke before they come to my office, because I just kind of have to stand back. I know I'll begin coughing, sneezing, or what have you, if I know that someone is smoking. It's a very serious problem in our community, and I do call it a problem, because when you care about people, you want them to take care of their health, and I think you would agree that smoking is not a way you take care of your health.
Right.
Now, your doctoral program was interesting to me. Return to play after knee injury in high school football and soccer athletes. How prevalent are high school athletic injuries?
Injuries in sport in general are more prevalent than we really like to think. Right now, there's a lot of concern being placed on concussion. You're always seeing concussion in the news. You're always seeing that this person, one of the football players last night in the Super Bowl, tore their ACL. So you're always seeing high school athletes get injured. The question is, are they getting the treatment that they need to get back on the field later? Are they being able to return back to play? And that was part of the goal of what I was looking at. Were these athletes being able to come back and play? And I actually did find out the majority of them, even if it was a really bad injury, were able to come back and play in their sport, whether in that season or the following season. So if we get them the help that they need now, they can come back later if they choose to come back later. There are some athletes who they have a knee injury and they don't really want to come back, or they have an ankle injury and they don't want to come back. So I think it's important to say these injuries happen. They're just a part of playing sports. It's just like part of life. Things happen. So let's just get them the help they need from the appropriate sports medicine people and not have coaches push them to come back too early or have parents push them. It's really that kind of community thing that comes back. Is everybody has to rally around this athlete and make sure that they're healthy first.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Dr. Charlotte Baker, who is an Epidemic Intelligence Service officer, and we're talking a little bit about sports and high school athletes. But I want to ask you another question, because I know we're going to run out of time here soon, but how did you get involved in public or community service, say, before you went to college? Were you involved?
I actually was very involved. Growing up in Yazoo City, I had the opportunity to do several different service projects with many community members like Elaine Owens, just giving my time. And it wasn't really something I thought of as, oh, I have to go do service this week. It was just something I felt I needed to do. And in high school, I had several different opportunities to participate in service projects and go out and help the community, whether it was painting or raking. So I really had a really good opportunity doing service. I actually had a four-year scholarship to a boarding school in Rome, Georgia, called Darlington School. And a lot of the scholarship was actually based on the service I had done before I got to high school. So it was a merit-based scholarship for all 4 years. And so they expected me to continue giving. And then when I got to college, expected me to continue giving. So community service is very, very, very important. And I think that the community helped a lot in providing those opportunities, whether they were blatant saying, this is a community service project coming up, or come paint this house with us today.
Now, what would you tell young people about accomplishing their dreams?
Don't ever let anybody tell you you can't. People will tell you from their own personal fears or jealousy, which those two things exist, that you shouldn't or that you can't. But if you're always willing to be resourceful and put in the hard work that you know you can give, you will always get what you went out in search of.
Now, if you'd gone up someplace other than Yazoo City, Mississippi, do you think you would have been the same person you are, been able to accomplish all the things that you have accomplished?
I may have done several of the different things that I've accomplished, but I think more importantly, the experience that I got growing up in Yazoo City formulated enough of my being that I still currently am about giving to others and helping others succeed and really investing in other people that I don't think I would have been the same. I think it actually is the reason I was able to have so many successes, which really don't belong to me. They belong to the people who helped me get here. You know, I have degrees, but those aren't my degrees. Those are the degrees of the people of Yazoo City who helped me and taught me. Those are the degrees of my family who made sure that education was so very important and put so high on a pedestal for me. That's theirs. You know, I don't look at it as, oh, I'm Dr. Baker. I mean, it's really fun to say, but those are the people who I should be calling doctor. They're the ones who got me there.
Okay, it's always so nice to recognize people who've helped you to become what you are. And before you go, I'd just like to ask one last question. Is there a website, or do you have information like an email or a number that young people can call if they wanted to ask you more questions about what you're doing?
Sure. I'm on Twitter, and they can tweet me at Baker_DRPH, that's Baker_DRPH, or they can email me at charlotte.m.h.baker@gmail.com.
I want to thank you so much for taking out this time, Dr. Baker, to be with us, and I wish you much success.
All right, thank you for having me.
Okay. I like to conclude our program honoring our Member of the Week in the National Congress of Black Women. And this week we've chosen Marilyn Blakely from Prince William, Virginia. She's our Youth Development Director, and you might call her my running buddy. Yesterday she attended that Delta Sigma Theta Social Action Commission conference with me in Maryland. We had a great time. I have asked her to travel with me to our big West Coast trip coming up soon, where I'll be a speaker for our Las Vegas chapter, our Inland Empire chapter up in Ontario area, and we'll be visiting with our Los Angeles chapter as they sponsor in collaboration with the White House Faith-Based Office. They've got just a lot of President Obama's staff to talk about housing, education, environmental protection, energy, and just about everything you need to know, as well as listening to your questions. And for more information on how you can attend, if you're in the area, just give us a call at 202-678-6788. Our salute to Marilyn Blakely is for all of the work that she does with our young people and for always being ready to travel with me. And don't forget to see our website at www.nationalcongressbw.org. You can join our organization there, get a lot of great information, and maybe even be moved to donate to some of our community service projects. We thank you. We love you. God bless you, and we'll see you next week.